The following is offered by Discerning Hearts, a 501c3 nonprofit Catholic apostolate dedicated to spiritual formation through the use of new media. To download this selection, or to browse hundreds of other programs, or to contribute to our mission with a charitable donation which is fully tax deductible, visit our website at discerninghearts.com.
And welcome to the Bible Study Evangelista Show. This is our third show in our Healing the Father Wound series, and we are looking today at the second sorrowful mystery, the scourging at the pillar. Sometimes it's called the scourging of Christ, the flagellation of Christ, Christ at the column, or scourging at the pillar. And it's from the Passion of Christ, and it's the fourth station of the Stations of the Cross. If you are non-Catholic, it's also, as I said, one of the sorrowful mysteries of the Rosary. And this is a Bible study show, the Bible Study Evangelista Show, and everything I do and offer is Bible through and through. So the Rosary is, I call it, the Bible on a string. It's actually, I didn't coin that phrase, a priest did somewhere, I can't remember the guy's name. But it is truly the Bible on a string, and that's what we're thinking of when we pray the Hail Marys of the Rosary. So it sounds like babbling, or it sounds like repetitive prayer, and it is repetitive, but that's not because it's mindless. It's because our hearts and our minds are meditating on the mysteries of the Rosary, and there are 10 decades. Well, I'll let you Google Rosary if you don't know anything about it, but I just want to assure you that it's completely biblical, and we're going to see that today as we go through this. Also, the Stations of the Cross are an ancient, both of these are actually ancient devotions in the church, but the Stations of the Cross is sometimes called the Way of the Cross, and you hear about it a lot of times at Lent, leading up to Easter, and that time of meditation of the whole church on the events leading up to the Passion of Christ. And so that every Friday of Lent, there are often offered in parishes the Way of the Cross, and those are 14 stations that trace his agony in the garden all the way through his crucifixion. And so that's also biblical. I just wanted to mention that because I know I have a lot of non-Catholic listeners, and I wanted to just explain a little bit about it. But if you've never heard of it, those are beautiful meditations that really, because they're physical too, because you're using your hands to move the beads, and it helps you keep up with the number. And because in the Way of the Cross, you're kneeling and standing and you're walking the way, supposedly, it's sort of a symbolic walking the way with Christ. Because you're physically moving, your whole body is really participating in the prayer, along with your soul and your spirit and your mind and your emotions. So it's a whole body, whole person prayer. And so I just wanted to mention that for some of you. I know you're probably wondering about all this Catholic stuff, but there you go. Now, our entire show today is on half of one verse in the book of John, the Gospel of John. Actually, I fibbed. It actually is one verse. It's in John chapter 19, verse 1, and it says, "Then Pilate took Jesus and scourged him," and that's it. And so there's a whole tradition that has been that has grown out of that. We have the visions of St. Anne Catherine Emmerich, on which was built the movie The Passion of the Christ. A lot of her visions sort of helped with that, and also the Stations of the Cross. All of that sort of grew up around the meditation of what it would have been like to be at that pillar. Now, when I saw the movie The Passion of the Christ, I was sort of struck by the pillar being so small and so low to the ground. I never have imagined it that way. I always imagine it as being much taller than Jesus would have been, and that they stretched his arms way up over his head and anchored him to the pillar that way, so that his whole body was just vulnerable and open. But I did like in the Passion where once they got done with one side, they turned them over and did the other side because that's what they would have done. I have read a couple of accounts of the scourging in which some say it was definitely a Roman practice to flog or scourge prisoners before they were crucified. Crucifixion was a Roman practice. And in fact, you know, we think of the crucifixion of Christ as being this sort of solitary event, but in actuality, lots and lots of people were crucified in Rome. So as they traveled from one city or one area to another, there would have been crosses on either side of the road. They would have been, in fact, the Romans were the ones who first made roads, the kind of roads that we think of, like cobblestone, that kind of thing. The Romans were the first to do that. And on the, they only did it in the more populated areas, but on through the countryside, there would have been crosses after crosses after crosses. So it's not like Jesus wouldn't have known what was going to happen to him and how that could play out. So when we think of crucifixion and we think of scourging, then it was a Roman practice and it was very barbaric. You probably already know that the whips were leather cords that had pieces of bone and metal and other fragments of stuff attached or tied to the ends and on throughout the length of the whips. And we saw that very clearly in the Passion of the Christ. That was another thing that I really actually appreciated there because it was pretty accurate. So some of the accounts that I read said that the Romans didn't limit the number of lashes one could receive. And then other accounts said that 40 was pretty much understood to be the limit at which a person could receive lashes. And after that point, they would just die. But we know that however many there were, Jesus did not, in fact, die. So the Catechism says in number 572 that Jesus' sufferings took their historical concrete form from the fact that he was rejected by the elders and the chief priests and the scribes, Matthew 8:31, who handed him to the Gentiles to be mocked and scourged and crucified, Matthew 20:19. So the Gentiles would have been the Romans. Gentiles were, those were anybody that were not Jewish. So while we're meditating on this second of the sorrowful mysteries of the Rosary, we should keep in mind that the fruit of this mystery is said to be purity. So then Pilate took Jesus and had him flogged, John 19:1, and that the fruit of that mystery is purity. Sometimes people say mortification of the senses. But what I really want to point out throughout the show and what we're doing today is specifically out of Isaiah 53, which is called a servant song. And it says there that he was pierced for our transgressions, he was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was upon him, and by his wounds we are healed, or by his stripes, some translations say, we are healed. And what I want to point out and what we're going to look at throughout today's show is that we are healed, dear one, through the very thing that wounds us. And so when we think of these lashes, when we think of this scourging, I don't know why, but in my mind, I picture almost a ladder because each rung of the ladder is one lash. And however many wounds we have and the memories that are associated with those wounds, we sort of can imagine those to be rungs of the ladder or lashes. And we got them one at a time. So imagine this ladder is in your soul and the very bottom rung is the first one. And in order to get to the bottom where the healing actually is, you have to start at the top of the ladder and work your way down the lashes or down the rungs. So you have to retrace or go backward through the wounds in order to heal. Now, I know that I know my mother in particular, she doesn't listen to the show anymore because she's retired and she used to listen to it at work. But that used to bother her a lot because she doesn't like to cry. And a lot of us are that way. You may have determined that you're never going to cry another tear. And I know I got to that point at some point. I was like, I am so done with this. I am never crying over him again. I'm never crying over this problem again. I'm just done. Done with the tears, done with the sobbing, done with the hurt, done with all of that. And we looked at that agony last week because we want to be careful that we accept God's will for our healing, which means we have to enter into that Gethsemane, that crushing. And it says there in Isaiah 53, as I read, he was crushed for our iniquities. And we know iniquity is crookedness, it's sin. So he was crushed because of us, and he was pierced for our transgressions, which we're going to look at, I hope, in the last segment of the show, because we're not going to have time to do it next week when we talk about the crown of thorns. That's going to be a show entirely devoted to ancestry and family patterns and how to heal from those and how to keep our children from having those wounds and what to do if we have inflicted wounds on our children. So that whole family thing is going to go along with the crown of thorns, and I promise to tie it in. I know it makes no sense now. But because of that, we're going to look at the piercing and the crown of thorns a little bit today, just a tad throughout that last segment. But right now, we have to take a break, so don't go anywhere, and I'll be back in a moment. This is Sonja Corbett, your Bible study evangelista.
Sonja created the Love the Word Bible study method just for you, based on Mary's personal practice and formulated for your personality and temperament. Get your Love the Word meditations every Monday morning by signing up at BibleStudyEvangelista.com. Now, here's Sonja.
The Second Sorrowful Mystery. Welcome back to the show. I'd like to take a moment to thank my newest friends of the show. I know I almost hate to even say this, but I can't stop saying it because I mean it so deeply. I thank my friends of the show so much. You guys help me. You love and lift me. Not just my newest, but all of you. And I have begun to have masses said for the friends of the show simply because I am so grateful for you. Your prayers, your financial help, your adoration hours, the time you spend in prayer for the ministry. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I cannot thank you enough. But I'm going to name you Allison, Ursilia, I think is how you say your name. I hope I didn't butcher it. Heather, Maria, Susan, Robin, Mary, and Julie. Thank you and welcome to the friends of the show. I appreciate you so much. So we are in the second sorrowful mystery, the scourging of Christ. We have seen that in a flogging, the Romans would make a whip of several strips of leather, and they were tied at the ends and throughout the leather, they were embedded, but tied with jagged pieces of bone and metal, lead. And as I said, some people say that there was no limitation placed on the number of lashings that were inflicted, but some people say that 40 was the max, and so they scourged Jesus at 39, and then, of course, he survived in order to be crucified. But we looked at Isaiah 53, and that's really the crux of where we're sort of going to camp out throughout this show. But I really want to spend the time today looking at by his stripes we are healed, because in order to be healed, we have to retrace the wounds. We have to work backwards in detachment from those memories that are so deeply associated with such pain. And that is absolutely necessary to healing. You can ask any psychiatrist, any psychologist, they will all tell you that in order to heal, you must acknowledge the pain of it and acknowledge the specific memory associated with a particular pattern or a particular coping mechanism. And those of you who have been in therapy, you know all this. I'm just trying to explain scientifically why this works for people who may not know. It is very important, and I have been to therapy some. I haven't been a whole lot. I've done a whole lot of reading. What I have done is sat under God's, I don't even know how to say it, but under God's healing in prayer. And he used the scriptures to do that with me. And he led me in this way. He led me in the same ways that your doctors and therapists have helped you. So, I mean, that's, I don't know. I'm not giving credence necessarily to one method or another. I'm just showing you that Jesus is showing us how to do this. And he shows us that it's by his stripes that we are healed. And so he is the one. Every blow from that whip was for your sake. Every tear in his flesh, every drop of his blood, that precious blood that flowed was for your healing. Every agonizing moment of pain he endured was to secure your peace. His punishment is your freedom and my freedom. By his stripes, we are healed. And so our wound, especially the predominant thought that has been sort of hollowed out by that wound, and the behaviors and the habits and the self-medication and all of that that comes out of that wound, that's what we have to look at. And in order to get into that deep, abscessed, yucky place, you have to descend the ladder one rung at a time. Now, some of you are going to have far many more rungs than I. In all, I would say I probably had about 10. And it was surprising, really. I mean, I didn't have a whole lot of really terrible memories, I didn't think, until God began that healing with me, and I would have an eruption, an emotional eruption, and I would act out of it in some way, self-medication, or maybe it was a relationship with someone, a toxic relationship, or maybe not a toxic one. Maybe it was just a relationship at work, and it caused an eruption of some sort. And we'll talk about how to identify the patterns in those things in a moment, but I just want to make the point that it's the wound that will be the source of your salvation, your sanctification. And it's the same principle that by his stripes we are healed, and in his stripes it is our stripes by which we are healed. We have to go backward and detach the emotion, the subconscious emotion that has been attached to particular memories. And those arise from coping mechanisms. The self-medication, I love this. Our house doctor, Dr. Candace, I'll call her. And she's a member of our discussion community. And she sticks in all this really fascinating science. And one of the things that I've heard her say that I thought was so cool, because it explains it finally. I have an explanation for this. So self-medication is a substitution for what we call the love chemical that is released in our bodies when we experience the love of someone else, this oxytocin. Oxytocin is the love chemical. It's that chemical that bonds a mother to a baby, or that bonds a husband and a wife. Oxytocin is released with touch and with, well, you know, I mean, we all know what it's like to be truly loved and truly seen and loved even for what is seen in us. And that love and experiencing that love releases oxytocin. And when we get with God on a daily basis through love the word exercises in our readings, God begins to release that love into our souls, and we experience it and we feel it and we know it in a way that we never have before. That is one of the very first things that God does with us in prayer, because we have to be assured of his love in order to go forward in the difficulty of this process of descending the ladder and descending the lashes down into the wound to the very seat of it. We have to get to the root and the seat of the wound. So God gives us experiences of his love, and he does it almost overwhelmingly, and it releases oxytocin, which is the love chemical. And when we self-medicate, what happens is the body substitutes for the lack of love, and what is released chemically in the body is dopamine, which is sort of an inadequate copycat of oxytocin. Now, if you don't have a bond with either your mother or father, or maybe the attachments were malformed, or maybe you were just totally abandoned completely by them, you have a deficit of oxytocin, and it makes it more difficult to trust and to love because that part of you wasn't nurtured. So God begins that process of healing by assuring us and showing us and making us feel it. That's the thing. He makes us feel his love. And we know it in the deepest, darkest, scaredest parts of us. The parts that are so wounded and so afraid to even be honest about how wounded we are. That is where God loves us. And that releases oxytocin and it helps us begin to heal. Dopamine, though, is that rush you get when you do something pleasurable. So if you eat a pint of ice cream, or God forbid, a whole gallon, or for me, you know, I can eat almost an entire dozen of lemon-filled Krispy Kreme donuts, or maybe you get that rush from shopping, or maybe you get it from, who knows? I mean, everybody has his or her own go-to thing. Whatever it is, you have to know that that is a terrible substitute for the reality, the healing oxytocin. Dopamine cannot heal, but oxytocin can. So that is why it's so important chemically and scientifically for you to be in Love the Word, for you to be in the readings on a daily basis and practicing Love the Word. Go through the exercises and show up every day. Because God will begin the healing through that oxytocin. He's releasing those chemicals in us. And it sets the stage for doing the difficult part, which is descending the ladder, the lashes, the stripes that have been laid on us by whomever has wounded us, whoever it is. It could be a mother or father. It could be a priest. It could be an uncle. It could be anybody, a teacher. Who knows? Whatever it is, though, God knows where it is and he knows how to reach it. So we have to be in Love the Word. We have to be in those readings so that he can meet with us and begin that healing process and begin helping us release that oxytocin in a way that's going to help us heal. So I hope that made sense. We are healed by Jesus's stripes, and he leads us in the very same thing. By our own stripes in him, we are also healed. We have to. There is no other way but through that way. And I'm sorry to say it. Well, I'm not really sorry, but it's just the truth of it. So we'll be back in a moment.
You're listening to the Bible Study Evangelista Show, Bible Study Spirits That Taste Like Cake.
Hi, this is Chris McGregor of Discerning Hearts, which is a 501c3 fully tax-deductible nonprofit organization dedicated to evangelization and spiritual formation through the use of new media. Discerning Hearts creates engaging multimedia specializing in podcasts and radio broadcasts, faithful to the teachings of the Roman Catholic Church and its rich, authentic spiritual tradition. We hope that if this has been helpful for you, that you will first pray for our mission. And if you feel us worthy, please consider a charitable donation, which is fully tax deductible, to support our efforts. We charge nothing for any of the programs that are available on Discerning Hearts, and our outreach is literally to the world. Please tell a friend about Discerning Hearts, and either download our free apps, which are available at iTunes and Google Play stores, or visit discerninghearts.com.
right, so we left off talking about how we have to retrace the wounds and how we work backwards in that detachment. So I'd like to spend a little bit of time talking about how to do that. Our impurities are not beaten out of me the way they were beaten out of Christ. What I like to say is that Jesus will not break the bruised reed of me. He tells us the absolute truth, but he tells it to us in a way that is gentle. I mean, it is brutal for its truthfulness, and that self-knowledge, seeing ourselves, that's difficult. It's very difficult. But somehow, he can do it in a way that does not break us. We can accept the truth. We know it's true. It's painful. And we're willing to walk with him through it. At least that's my prayer. If you're listening to this show, if you're in this series at all, that's been my prayer for you. And I want you to know I have prayed incessantly for you and for me as well. Because this is the work of salvation. This is our purification. This is our healing. This is what we're on the earth to do. Because as we are healed, our families are healed. The people around us are healed. Because I think it's in the Magnificat. There's a meditation that comes up every once in a while that says that people who are healed are sources of peace for other people. They're not easily provoked. They're not vindictive. They don't seek revenge. They're just circles of peace. That's why Jesus was so attractive, because he couldn't be provoked. And it's not because he was holding himself back from it. It's that he understood where provocations come from in people and what they're motivated by. And once we are healed, we see that in other people and we go, oh gosh, that's not even my problem. That's totally them. And you can see in other people how that is working, and you feel a sense of compassion for them that even causes you to pray for them and even work with them in their own healing. So we want to become those sources of peace and healing for other people, but that cannot happen until we are healed. And in fact, even through the process of healing, there's a lot of other healing for other people that go on. Our children, a lot of you are worried about having inflicted those wounds on your own children. And I'm telling you, as you heal and you become honest with yourself, and I think this is one of the steps too in like AA or something. Some of you will know that, but I think it's one of the steps that you have to own the wounds that you've offered other people. And sometimes that means you have to go to them and you have to ask their forgiveness and you have to try to make restitution for it if you can. And in some cases, you know, maybe somebody has died and you're not able to do that. But God, my point is, God heals other people while he's healing us. And once we are healed, we don't act out of that wound anymore. It becomes our salvation and it becomes the salvation of other people. I'm a perfect example of that. I can't say that I'm 100% healed because I still get triggered. And I probably will always carry that. But I'm telling you, I know it for what it is. I know it, and it takes me almost no time now to understand that that's what it is. When that trigger happened for me, and I can't share it yet, but when that trigger happened for me a couple of weeks ago, and it had been months, and I had handled it well, but then it was like the crisis point, and I was so irritable, and I was kind of weepy, you know? I mean, everything made me just sensitive, and I kept thinking, wonder what that is, and then duh, you know? We're coming to the end, and a grief process has to occur one way or the other, and so grief is part of that as well. Now, let's spend a little bit of time in the rest of this segment talking about how to descend the ladder. And for me, the way I started to notice the pattern in my relationships, my circumstances, my habits, my self-medication, that kind of thing, and even in my deepest desires, all of that was sort of related together. And when I started to notice a problem was the pattern of it. I would notice that particular people caused a particular reaction. Now, I actually saw someone in the discussion community this past week talk about how she noticed in the middle of a fight she was talking about with her husband. She noticed in the middle of it that they were back in a pattern that they have repeated over and over. And at the time, she didn't relate it to her wound at all, but she noticed the pattern. That is the beginning of the process of descending the ladder into the deepest parts of the wound. So when you start to notice the pattern, that's when you have to say, okay, what is the pattern here? what kind of situation is this? Why do I feel triggered? What does it remind me of as far as a memory? And what is the wound associated with that memory? And you'll start to notice that your predominant fault, your trigger, and your repeating circumstances will all repeat over and over and over again. And each of the circumstances gets more and more painful and more hard to handle, out of control, the longer we don't notice the pattern. So God keeps trying to invite us into that self-knowledge through the things that are happening. So she said she noticed that they have this reoccurring fight. So if you have a reoccurring fight with someone, go look at that. Why is that? What is it provoking? Inspect and look at the emotions that arise in you that cause you to just feel out of control, and also inspect the ways you try to deal with the out of control emotion. For most of us, that means self-medication. But that interrupts, it throws dopamine on a fire that needs oxytocin. That's why I keep saying don't self-medicate. You have to go to God with all of this so that he can help you discern the pattern and discern the root of the pattern. So for me, my husband would criticize me and I would go off the deep end and I would just feel attacked. And sometimes he's pretty brutal in how he offers criticism. So it felt like an attack because it really was an attack. But I absorbed it in out of all proportion to even the criticism. I internalized it, first of all, which is irrational. You know, he's not attacking me as a person. He's possibly criticizing a behavior or whatever, and that is rational. I mean, it is right to point out someone's faults if it's right, you know, and even if it's not, there's always a glimmer of truth in it, or God wouldn't allow people to do that. It's not that necessarily what they say is always true, but that it can offer us some self-knowledge, even in maybe a related area. So we should always not just throw it away and say, well, that's all about you. You really should go to God with it and ask him, you know, is there something here that I need to look at? And sometimes it may just be as simple as I've hurt their feelings and I didn't mean to, and maybe I just need to say I'm sorry. I don't know. I don't know what the situations are, and I hate to try to be so general because it doesn't make much sense to be so general. But my point, though, is follow the breadcrumbs of the repeating circumstances and the patterns in your relationships. So if particular people, if you're in a relationship pattern with a specific person or a type of person, you really need to look at that. And you need to find out, why does this person trigger me? What is it about their behavior or how they interact with me that causes this? Where is a memory associated with that emotion? And that's when the pain will come, because you'll remember the memory and it will be hurtful. And that's when you go to God with all of that and just, I call it vomit, just throw it up on him. Tell him everything. This is what just happened. This is why it was unjust. This is how I feel about what just happened. But look, Lord, it actually goes back to this too. And you know that, and that's why you allowed it to happen. So how do you want me to deal with this? That's where the stop thing comes in. Sin not, tell God, offer the right sacrifice, and put your trust in God. Because at that point, once we are in the throes of the emotion, we have to get the emotion out. So we have to do that with God. We can't throw up on everybody around us, or else we're just perpetuating the wound and nobody's being healed, especially not us. So we have to go to God and give it to him and ask for his wisdom, as the book of James says. So we practice stop, we get with God, and we do the whole process with him. We allow him to help us know what to do next, and we sit with him in the pain of the memory that is associated with that emotion. And as we do that, we experience a catharsis. Lots of subconscious stuff starts to bubble up, and that's why we feel irritable and sensitive without knowing why, because a lot of times we've been triggered and we didn't know. So when we can identify the patterns in how we react to certain things and certain people and certain circumstances, then we can start to identify the rungs of the ladder and the memories associated with those stripes, we'll call them, those wounds that we have received. Or maybe it's a lack of something, which I mentioned last week. Maybe the wound is we went without most of what we really needed at the time that we needed it. Maybe we have no attachment bonds at all with a parent. Maybe they completely abandoned us. Maybe they died and it wasn't even their fault, but we still have that wound of abandonment. Maybe we feel alone. All of those things we have to get with God about it, so that he can throw that oxytocin in that wound and start helping us heal. And then we can really rationally start to deal with our behavior and the behavior of other people around us. We'll talk more about that when we get back. This is Sonia Corbett, your Bible study evangelista, on the Scourging at the Pillar.
Sonia created the Love the Word Bible Study Method just for you, based on Mary's personal practice and formulated for your personality and temperament. Get your Love the Word meditations every Monday morning by signing up at BibleStudyEvangelista.com. Now, here's Sonia.
Alright, we've covered a lot of ground so far. I want to review a little bit. The second sorrowful mystery is the scourging at the pillar. Jesus is taken before the high priest, where he's falsely accused and he's beaten and insulted. The Jewish leaders take Jesus before Pilate because only Pilate can impose the death penalty as a Roman ruler. The robber, Barabbas, is preferred to Jesus. Pilate can't find a cause in him, but he wants to appease the Jews, so he orders Jesus to be beaten. The scourge is made of leather thongs, to which are attached these small, sharp pieces of metal and bone. Jesus is bound to a pillar and cruelly beaten until his whole body is covered with deep, deep wounds. They believe that those scourges, the pieces of stuff that was incorporated into the scourge, the whips and the thongs, that it could actually, it had hooks on it, so that it would actually tear the skin and the flesh open, like down to the organs, okay? The Lamb of God then offers his suffering for the sins of the world, and Jesus suffers so much in his sacred flesh to satisfy, especially for the sins of the flesh. That is why the fruit of this particular mystery is said to be the mortification of the flesh, or purity, okay? I will talk about that, I think, a little more next week, I hope. I don't have time today. Then the prophecy of Isaiah 52 and 53 is fulfilled. He was wounded for our iniquities. He was bruised for our sins. And then God the Father, by the merits of Jesus in this awful, painful scourging, will have mercy on us and on the whole world. So one of the things that actually comes up in that verse, as I said, verse 1 is, then Pilate took Jesus and scourged him. And then in the next two verses it says, and the soldiers plaited, or wove, a crown of thorns and put it on his head and arrayed him in a purple robe. So I want to look just a little bit at the mechanism behind this plaited crown of thorns before we actually get there next week, because I'm going to spend so much time on family patterns and ancestral curses and sins and all that, which if you've never heard about it before, I mean, don't freak out. It's basically, it just means the patterns through entire generations and family lines. That's really all it is. But what's interesting is that word plaited or braided or woven. And immediately when I think of that, what comes to my mind is Genesis 15:6. And I know this is going to sound unrelated, but you're not going to believe how cool this is. In Genesis 15:6, and later on St. Paul repeats it in the book of Romans, it says that Abraham believed the Lord, and the Lord accounted it to him as righteousness. Now, it depends on the version, That's Genesis 15:6. It depends on the version and the translation that you use as to what that word says. It's however it's translated, it usually is some sort of accounting or crediting term. But the exact word doesn't matter at all. It's the meaning that really matters, and it means to weave or fabricate or plait or design or contrive. So just like this crown of thorns was woven, now it was woven by the Romans, but in a sense, God allowed it to be done. So it was woven. And here it says that Abraham believed the Lord, and the Lord wove it to him as righteousness. And as I said, usually there's an accounting term used there, but that's not what it actually means. It means to design or contrive. So what it's saying is that God devised or braided or wove all of Abraham's belief in all that God promised him, and every single step into Abraham's full and complete purification and righteousness. Is that not incredible? So that in the same way, so the crown of thorns then is sort of like another way of looking at this ladder and the rungs that go down into the wound. By his stripes we are healed. So by the stripes or by the rungs of the ladder, we retrace the wounds that we received until we hit the bottom. And only God really knows when we're at the bottom. And probably we don't get there through the whole of our lives, in the sense that God continues to weave it into our righteousness. Even right now, my wound is being used to help offer you comfort and a path to consider in your own healing. So in that way, my own stripes have been woven into a crown of thorns that you can also use. And this woven crown or this ladder of stripes is then accounted to me and even to you as you practice it as righteousness, which means a complete salvation. So it's the same principle that I was getting at earlier, that we have to retrace the steps, because the source of our sin, that wound, is actually the source of our salvation. And that's what redemption means. It means that God can take all of that woundedness, all of that sin that we have perpetuated out of that woundedness, and he can work it to our salvation. He weaves it together as we follow him into something beautiful instead. He redeems it. And not just in this fly by the seat of your pants accidental or ethereal way that you can't actually put your finger on. It is a tangible thing. Our healing begins the healing for other people. Isn't that beautiful? Another thing, besides just the plaiting of the thorns, the crown, or the wovenness of how God uses those wounds, we'll see next week, to crown us. But the thorns themselves in that crown, and we can even say the thorns and the bits of bone and lead and all that in the scourge, those thorns too, then, they all mean something too. In the tabernacle, there was a veil between the sanctuary and the Holy of Holies. And it was hung a lot like most of our curtains are. It was a really thick curtain, about 4 inches wide, actually. And the tabernacle, the consecrated women at the tabernacle are the ones who wove that veil, Josephus says. He is, or was, a Jewish historian. And he said that veil was woven over again every year by the consecrated women who served at the tabernacle and later at the temple. So that would have been kind of what Mary did, all right? So this curtain then hung between the Holy of Holies and the holy place, and it hung from rings and clasps attached to a wooden pole, or a pillar it's called, okay? So do you see now how the poles and the pillars kind of go together? The scourging at the pillar, the veil is hung by poles in the tabernacle. And those pillars, in the tabernacle were actually overlaid with gold. And every single piece of wood used in the tabernacle was made of a particular wood called acacia wood. It's called an umbrella thorn for its flat-topped crown of umbrella-shaped leaves. It's similar to our cedar or teak in that it's resistant to rot and also to a locust tree. We have locusts around here. They bloom beautifully and they smell lovely, but they are covered in thorns, and I mean big long thorns, like 4-inch thorns. This acacia tree had those kinds of thorns, but it also had hook thorns interspersed. So you had these really long 4-inch or so thorns interspersed with these little hook thorns that were kind of squatty in between all of the long ones. So this umbrella acacia tree, it is prolific actually in very arid climates because it has very shallow roots and they can extract moisture from the soil above the hard pan of the earth. So it tolerates extensive summertime heat and drought, and as well as that dry, salty, alkaline soil of the arid Mediterranean and Africa even. So the acacia then, if you have seen pictures like on MPT or PBS or Nature or Nova or any of those, the acacia tree is that classic canopy tree that you see in African savannas like the Serengeti. And those spiny thorns are, as I said, interspersed with those little hook thorns. And natives then call that acacia a hook and prick tree for its thorns. So imagine if they're going to use it in the tabernacle, how they have to strip away the leaves and the thorns in order to prepare the wood to use. So perhaps that is why then the word acacia means to pierce or to scourge. And the veil was symbolic of the flesh of Christ. And the flesh of Christ, that veil was the only way into the Holy of Holies, the inner chamber, and it foreshadowed the flesh of Christ hung suspended from poles named for the word pierce or scourge. Isn't that incredible? Dear one, he was pierced for our transgressions. By his stripes we are healed. You claim your healing by his stripes, and you go every single step, every rung, every stripe, down the rungs of that ladder to the root of that wound with God, and let him heal you through each of those memories. Discern your patterns. I'm going to give you the action items in the email. Let's discern our patterns. Next week, we'll talk about generational sins and wounds. This is Sonia Corbett, your Bible study evangelista.
Hi, this is Chris McGregor of Discerning Hearts, which is a 501c3 fully tax-deductible nonprofit organization dedicated to evangelization and spiritual formation through the use of new media. Discerning Hearts creates engaging multimedia specializing in podcasts and radio broadcasts, faithful to the teachings of the Roman Catholic Church and its rich, authentic spiritual tradition. We hope that if this has been helpful for you, that you will first pray for our mission. And if you feel us worthy, please consider a charitable donation, which is fully tax deductible, to support our efforts. We charge nothing for any of the programs that are available on Discerning Hearts, and our outreach is literally to the world. Please tell a friend about Discerning Hearts and either download our free apps, which are available at iTunes and Google Play stores, or visit discerninghearts.com.